30 degrees. Did you hear that? It borders on the chilly, doesn't it? It almost sounds like November. Boo, it is. My goodness, brr. Welcome, everybody. Gray day, cool day. Stan Turner with you here. Thank you so much for your company. It's 12:06. You heard the temperature, 30 degrees. We're going to warm up the airwaves here over the next hour because, well, we'll tell you about that in just a minute. Oh, boy. Well, this is kind of it's very self-serving, but I just wanted to say that it was 10 years ago today that I began this show right here on KLBB Club. Look at that. Getting a round of applause, which you cannot hear from the control room. Thank you very much indeed. You did it just like I asked you to do it. Thank you so much. Yep. How many shows have we done since then? Boy, just about every Saturday. It's been a remarkable ride. My thanks go out to Dan Smith, the owner and operator of KLBB, for trusting me. I don't know about doing that, but every Saturday here to do a show I hope is to your liking. We've always tried to do something here to inform and entertain you. Yes, learning can be a form of entertainment, of fun, and we've been striving to be good storytellers here. Hope we've done that. Thanks to you listeners who have been regulars or, once in a while listeners. We appreciate that, and our wonderful sponsors. So I just wanted to acknowledge and thank you all for your support on the show, and away we go into year number 11. Let's get to it right now. Imagine, folks, imagine this, theater of the mind, a time when your mailbox, email, or curbside is no longer stuffed with political campaign handouts. A time when the TV and radio airwaves are no longer clogged with political attack ads. Well, hang on, folks. That day is coming and coming soon. Yes, next Tuesday is election day. And after that, all the sound and the fury will cease, at least until the next election cycle revs up. Seems never-ending, doesn't it? Irritating, annoying. Ah, but we know elections are important and we must pay attention and cast informed votes if we can cut through all the bombast and all the baloney and blather. It's our purpose this hour to try to do just that, blow away the fog and the baloney and get a clear-eyed picture of what's going on in this election. Joe Kimball is a veteran news reporter who has covered the political landscape for many years. Joe was with the Minneapolis Star and Tribune. In recent years, he's been informing us via that fine online news organization, MinPost. Also with us, Stephen Scheer, professor of political science at Carleton College in Northfield, specializes in American politics. Professor Scheer is a much sought-after political and government analyst. You have read his sage analyses, no doubt, in the New York Times, the Washington Post, as well as the local broadsheets, and he's also been seen and heard on many broadcast outlets, namely CBS, CNN, and on numerous local stations. Stephen Scheer has authored several books on the subject at hand. I love the title of one of them. You Call This an Election? America's Peculiar Democracy. Another of his books, By Invitation Only, The Rise of Exclusive Politics in the United States. Gentlemen, welcome to the show. Thank you for being here. Indeed. Joe, go ahead and talk.
Well, good morning. afternoon already.
Good afternoon. Professor Scheer, how you doing?
I'm doing well, thanks.
Thank you for being with us here on your day off. Professor Scheer, I know that you are a Sherlockian, a fan of...
I am indeed.
Yes, a Sherlockian, a fan of the great super sleuth. How about some deductions and inferences regarding this election? What would Sherlock Holmes say about all this?
Well, he would say it is of vital importance in the art of detection to determine which facts are vital and which are incidental, I'm quoting. And that's what we're about today, finding the vital facts.
Is it Sherlock who famously said, we see, but we do not observe? Is that
yes,
it?
And yeah. That's one of my faves.
Okay, I thought so.
Elementary.
Thank you, Joe. Elementary. All right. I don't think he ever said that, did he? Well, anyway, Stephen Scheer, Joe Kimball, we've got lots to cover here. We're talking about election 2014. And, if we were going to pick out some marquee races, we're going to focus on the Minnesota race for governor, U.S. Senate, 8th District U.S. House race, and the Minnesota Legislative House race, among some other things, but those are pretty much the high-profile races around here. Professor Scheer, if I may call you Steve the next hour. Is that okay, sir?
Sure.
All right, appreciate it. Thank you. Steve, we saw a piece the other day by one of your counterparts, I think, at Hamline University, saying that the The Democrats especially lack what he calls a narrative for this campaign season, and there's a certain arrogance among them. What do you think is meant by, what's a campaign or election narrative? What are we talking about?
Well, you know, I'm not sure I agree with Dave Schultz about that. I think they have a narrative, which is Minnesota is doing better than it was 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. You know, unemployment is down. The state budget is in better shape and so forth. So I actually think they have a narrative. The question is whether it will be a persuasive narrative, you know? And that remains to be seen, because we certainly know that the national trends are moving pretty decisively against the Democrats. And I think one of the interesting questions, I'm not sure what the answer to this is, how much will those tides affect Minnesota elections? And the polls so far, at least for the U.S. Senate and for the governor, it doesn't look like those tides are affecting Minnesota. Democrats are still favored there. But Election Day is Tuesday, and we'll find out.
Mm-hmm. What's the Republican narrative?
The Republican narrative, I think, focuses on some controversial things that the Democrats have done, such as the new Senate office building, the Viking Stadium, and the Minshew launch. You know, that's mm-hmm. their narrative that they're bringing up. And they're also trying to tie as many Democrats as possible to President Obama. You know, one of the most striking things, Stan, in the polls this fall is that Barack Obama's job approval in the state is in the 30s, around 38%.
Wow.
Yet the job approval of Senator Franken and Governor Dayton is 50% or above. And that's really an interesting departure from national trends.
Mm-hmm. So it's no surprise we're not seeing the president here campaigning for Minnesotans.
No, I don't think so. He's being very selective in where he goes, Joe.
I think another way to look at that is a lot of candidates, Democrats, are not asking him to come and campaign either. They see him
as
an albatross.
Well, that's true.
Yeah,
that's true.
That is true.
He's mainly in pretty blue states, you know, pretty heavily Democratic states, where he's trying to sort of goose the Democratic turnout because he's not very welcome in the red states where so many Democrats are running for re-election.
Okay, Both Steve Scheer and Joe Kimball, let's take the races, what I call the marquee races here. The race for Minnesota Governor Dayton versus Jeff Johnson here. Dayton, the incumbent, the Democrat. What do you gentlemen see as Dayton's his strengths and his vulnerabilities? Joe?
He certainly has seen some improvement in the state economy, and whether he can take all the credit for that or not is debatable. But, certainly his jobs are up. They're not great jobs, all of them, but he is pointing to that as a big improvement since he's been on board.
All right. Stephen, what about his pluses, Dayton's pluses?
Yeah, well, I think Joe's right about that. I think that the Democrats and Mark Dayton are hanging their hat on the economic improvement in the state. And I also, they're pointing to the fact that the budget problems in state government are not what they used to be, that they have abated considerably. So I think they're saying, and also they're pointing out some benefits like universal kindergarten and things like that. So I think they're, and if you, I guess it's all summarized by a Mark Dayton ad I've seen lately, which is, reminds me of the Ronald Reagan 1984 ad, Morning Again in America. And it's sort of morning again in Minnesota, things are so much better. And then we get to Mark Dayton, and of course he's one of the important reasons why.
Okay. How about Dayton's vulnerabilities? Where is he soft?
I'll let Joe go first with that.
All right, Joe.
Well, certainly they and he admits it, that the Minshew rollout was a disaster, and we're hoping some of us who actually use it.
You had problems, didn't you, Joe?
Yeah, it took me forever to get going on that, and finally it seemed like it did work, but hope that's better this year. The price increases, things are up. I guess we knew that would happen, but it's all complicated with Preferred One pulling out. So it's real hard to make a real clear point on that. And he himself says that was one of the major disappointments of his first term.
How about raising the minimum wage, Steve Scheer, and also promoting the new stadium for the Vikings and the Senate office building?
Yeah, well, the minimum wage is, pretty popular with the Minnesota public, and it's not clear that it's had an immediate negative effect on the state economy, so I don't really see that as a negative. And really, Republicans haven't been raising that issue terribly much. But the Viking Stadium came up in the debate last night, you know, on TPT between Dayton and Johnson. The whole question about whether Mark Dayton was attentive to the details of the agreement and so forth, that's one of Johnson's arguments. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, the State Senate office building, the $90 million office building was brought up, and that's also, I think, being brought up a lot in state legislative races.
Mm-hmm.
So perhaps those items will matter. One thing that's interesting in its absence is the whole gay marriage debate, which was so hot 18 months ago, has now basically disappeared from state politics as a controversy.
Okay, let's look at Jeff Johnson right now, the Republican candidate, the challenger for governor. What are his strong points right now? Joe Kimmel?
Well, he's not Dayton.
Well, Republicans will love you for that.
I think that's what he's saying.
What do we mean by that, Joe?
Well, and, you know, last night I noticed he spent an awful lot of time talking about how he didn't think the governor was engaged and that he would be. You know, he's seems to have energy when we see him and kind of points out that the governor doesn't. And so I think he's looking, we need a change. I don't know that he's laid out a real big case on what those changes would be.
All right. Stephen Scheer, what about Jeff Johnson? What strikes you as his strong points?
Yeah, well, he is a pretty emphatically conservative Republican, as was Tom Emmer 4 years ago, but he has a very different personality, at least in public, than Tom Emmer. Tom Emmer was sort of a hot partisan who was provocative and contentious. And Jeff Johnson is really not that sort of personality. He sort of radiates Minnesota nice, very, very much, you know, hi, I'm friendly, I'm the fellow who lives down the street, you know, mm-hmm. that sort of approach. And I think that helps, and I think it's particularly important for conservative Republicans to have that personal appeal in this state, because it's not a conservative Republican state, and in order to broaden your appeal, you can't look like a right-wing hatchet man, which I think was at times Tom Emmer's problem 4 years ago. So I think that's one of his pluses. But I also agree with Joe that his alternative agenda has only been sketched out very broadly, and if he were to get into more details, I think there'd be a lot more controversy about his candidacy.
Even with name like Johnson, which certainly is not unusual here, it seems like he really has been working hard and needs to do more to have that name recognition as to who he is and who he's running. His lieutenant governor is pretty unknown around most of the state, not down in Rochester. Actually, you mentioned the debate last night. I was watching with someone who hasn't paid quite as much attention as I have, and she said, "Well, he seems nicer than I thought. You know, he did come across, you know, reasonable as opposed to Emmer maybe last time."
Well, gentlemen, at last polling here, the Minnesota poll showed Dayton 45%, Jeff Johnson 38%, and Johnson had increased, had tightened the margin a little bit, although Dayton was still flat, 45% to 38%. Steve Scheer, how do you handicap this race right now? What do you think?
Well, you know, other polls have shown Dayton at or above, slightly above 50%. If those polls are correct, Mark Dayton's in very good shape. If the Strib poll is correct, we could have a contest on our hands, because I guess I'll invoke the Democratic political consultant Joe Trippi, who was the mastermind of Howard Dean's 2004 presidential campaign. And Trippi recently said on TV that he has a 45% rule, and I think it's a good rule. If an incumbent towards the end of the campaign is at 45% or below, it's very hard for them to get to 50%, because the undecideds are probably going to break heavily for the challenger. So, you know, Stan, if it's a 45% standing for Dayton, I'd say he's in some trouble. If it's 50%, like the other polls have said, he's probably not in trouble. Mm-hmm. We're going to find out Tuesday.
We sure will. You're not going to hazard a guess right now, are you?
No, because I think maybe we'll get some late polls Sunday and Monday that might clarify this.
Joe Kimble?
Also this year, the independents candidate, I don't think, is gaining much traction to make a difference in the numbers either. So So Dayton really has to overcome that, too.
Okay, we're going to take a break here. We'll get back. We're trying to get a cleaned-up phone line, too, to Steve Shearer. We got some hobgoblins on the line here, too, kind of interfering a little bit. We'll try to clean that up. It's 12:20 right now. Stan Turner here with you with the show here. We're talking what else? The election 2014 with Professor Steve Shearer, Carleton College, and Joe Kimble of MinnPost. We'll be right back.
At Hymie's Haberdashery, men never sacrifice fashion for weather. So no matter how cold it gets, you can still spot a Hymie's man by his impeccable taste and the confidence that only comes from a hot lather shave. Hymie's Haberdashery helps men look and feel their best with high-quality clothing cut and styled just for them. Create a look that's uniquely yours with tailored suits, overcoats, hats, and accessories that make winter blush and at prices that won't melt your wallet. Hymie's Haberdashery, 400 St. Peter Street in downtown St. Paul. Online at Hymie's.
Another virus?
Relax. At Computer Repair and Services, every repair costs $99.95 and nothing more. Whether we spend 1 hour or 3 days, repairing your PC is always $99.95. I'm Joe Gillette. Visit Computer Repair and Services at 1441 Stillwater Boulevard or call us at 651-439-7544. It's just $99.95 for every PC repair, excluding hardware. At Computer Repair and Services, you can afford to fix your PC.
You want to get your shopping done quickly? Make a list of the people you would like to give to and also write down something they are interested in and take the list to Valley Bookseller and ask them to recommend books for each. The staff will amaze you with the choices you can make. They will even mail them for you. It's Christmas magic at Valley Bookseller. Call 651-430-3385. Great books, great people. 217 Main Street North in Stillwater. They've been sitting on that shelf for years. Those special memories of your childhood on slides, videotapes, or 8mm film. You want to share them, but you don't have a way to do it. Now is the time to let images of the past do it for you, and you'll have those special memories to share with the family. Images of the Past can transfer your memories to DVD to be enjoyed anytime by the whole family. Think of the future, preserve the past. On Main Street in Stillwater at Images of the Past and at imagesofthepast.com. We are back here. Yes, we're slicing and dicing election 2014. We're all going to find out what it means come Tuesday. That's election day. With us, Professor Stephen Shearer at Carleton College, professor of political science, a specialist on American politics, and MinnPost political reporter Joe Kimble for many years with the Star Trib. Gentlemen, thank you for being with us. We have tried to reestablish a better phone line between here and Northfield and Stephen Shearer, so I hope it's a little bit better. Gentlemen, let's shift to the U.S. Senate race. Al Franken, the Democratic incumbent, Mike McFadden, the Republican challenger. Steve Shearer, what are you making of this race right now?
Well, I think Franken has probably a larger and a bit more secure lead than Mark Dayton. He's tended to be 50% or above in just about every survey recently, and Mike McFadden has only been in the high 30s, only occasionally getting into the low 40s. So it does look like Al Franken has built enough of an edge that he's the probable victor next Tuesday.
The millions of dollars coming into the state, Franken has topped into donors, all 50 states, I guess. McFadden's not far behind. All this money, Joe, rolling in here, we're awash in greenbacks, aren't we?
Well, it's good for the TV stations, that's
I
for sure.
I guess it is. They're not buying much radio time, I'll tell you that. It's all TV.
Steve, do you think that that Franken's just done such a good job? Has he kind of worked behind the scenes to build kind of a base here? Wondering why he's doing so well in the face of this onslaught.
Well, yeah, you know, I think a lot of people expected this to him to be in more electoral trouble than he has been so far because of the very close and controversial way he won 6 years ago. That hasn't proven to be the case, and I think there are several reasons. One, I think that Franken has adopted a very low-key, serious demeanor as senator and helped to erase those more controversial images of him as a professional comedian. Second of all, he's raised a huge amount of money, over $24 million over the last 2 years. And third, he's got a real advantage with the Democratic Party in two ways. First of all, the Democratic turnout operation is probably going to be, again, considerably superior to the Republicans. And then the Alliance for Better Minnesota, which is a heavily funded group, an independent group that supports Democrats, has been running a lot of ads as well. And that's helped both Dayton and Frank. And so he's had a whole bunch of advantages that he's built up over the years or that he's now enjoying for other reasons that Mike McFadden, frankly, doesn't have.
Well, let's talk about Mike McFadden, Steve Scheer. What impresses you in a positive way about the man, about his campaign so far?
Well, I do think he's a pretty natural campaigner. He's affable. He's articulate. He presents a positive image. He seems to be reasonably knowledgeable on the issues. He is underfunded. And he shares that trait with Jeff Johnson, and I think that's keeping him from making this a completely competitive contest. He initially promised to devote considerable amount of his personal wealth to his campaign, and he has since not really done that, and that may make an important difference in the race.
Do you think national Republicans saw other opportunities and didn't pitch in here the way they might have?
Yeah, I think the polling showed that the opportunities in Minnesota were not what they are in, say, Colorado, North Carolina, a variety of other states. And so national Republican money really has not been coming into Minnesota for that Senate race. Now, it has for the House races, the 8th District in northeastern Minnesota and the 7th District in western Minnesota. Turn on your TV and you're seeing a huge number of Republican ads aimed at Democratic incumbents. But you're not seeing it in the Senate race.
You want to handicap this one, Steve Scheer? Who wins?
Well, I think Franken is definitely favored, and I would be surprised if he lost on Tuesday.
Okay, Joe?
I wonder how much carry-through that will have for the other candidates, especially like those congressional races you mentioned.
That's right.
Yeah, that's a really interesting question. It's hard to know at this point.
Hanging over all this is the question of a lot of Democrats have been known to sit out midterm elections. They don't show up in the vast numbers they do during a presidential election year. And so the party, both here and around the country, has been trying to get out the vote. And that's going to mean a big thing. Also, early voting, Steve Scheer and Joe Kimball.
Yeah.
That's a big deal this time around. What effect? We see the Star Tribune today has a story on early voting showing that more than 160,000 Minnesota voters have already cast their ballots, and the crunch is about to come. We'll see a lot happening on Monday. What do you think? What effect might this big surge of early voting have, and who might benefit? Which party?
Well, Ken Martin, the DFL chair in the Pioneer Press yesterday, claimed that 65% of the early votes are probably coming from Democratic voters, and that a good percentage of them are sort of infrequent voters who may or may not have voted without early balloting in 2014. So if that's true, it should benefit Democrats. Now, I would not be surprised if early voting favors Democrats. The reason I say that is because they have such an extensive get-out-the-vote operation. They have 31 field offices in the state, about 120 paid staff. And when you've got that much on the ground, and it's significantly more than the Republicans have, they have about 18 offices and a little over 20 staff who are paid.
Democrats brought in...
That proportion may make a difference with early voting.
Democrats brought in Michelle Obama and Joe Biden up north spur that early voting also.
Yeah, and, you know, if you think about it, the Republicans don't have really strong national surrogates to use right now. I mean, it'd be hard to bring in Mitt Romney because he lost the state by 8 points. Chris Christie's been brought in, but how many people know who Chris Christie is, you know?
Something about traffic and a bridge or something. Yeah, we remember that. Steve Scheer and Joe. Joe, go ahead.
Well,
Joe.
The Star Tribune had something on the early voting this morning that seemed to indicate that most of those who have done it on their analysis are people who did vote in the last three or four elections. And so maybe it's not a new group coming in to do this. We have the, what is it, no-fault... absentee voting this year. You don't have to have a reason. So that seems to be goosing a little bit the numbers for this midterm.
Well, we
if turnout is higher, it will probably be because the DFL has spurred a higher turnout. And, you know, usually turnout's about 20 points below what presidential turnout is in Minnesota. Presidentially, we're at 75%. Midterms, 50 to 55%. And in those midterms, Republicans usually do better in a wide variety of races than they do in presidential years. So that if we get higher turnout, it will be because the DFL is trying to combat that historical tendency, and they're successful in doing so.
So on Election Day, if we see that numbers look good, that probably bodes well for the Democrats?
I would think so, yeah. Mm-hmm.
The StarTrib analysis of early voting also says a large number of over 65 voters have shown up so far to vote early. And in the past few days, young voters, the so-called millennials, have been going to the polls, too. That may augur well for the Democrats, the younger voters. Hard to say, but could be. We have a lot of Wisconsin listeners on this station, on this program, so we, Steve Shearer and Joe Kimball, ought to spend at least a couple seconds on the race for governor there, the incumbent Scott Walker, the Republican, and Mary Burke, the Democratic challenger. As we say, she's brought in Barack Obama, and she dumped $5 million into her own campaign the other day. She's been waging a very competitive race. Stephen Shearer, what do you make of it so far?
Well, you know, it's very interesting watching Twin Cities media because I'm seeing Scott Walker in ads as much as I'm seeing Jeff Johnson or Mark Dayton. Very heavy ad rotation in the Twin Cities hitting the western Wisconsin market. This looks to be a very close race. However, we had a rather striking poll result come out 2 days ago. It was the last Marquette University poll. Now, let me give you a little historical context on that poll. That poll accurately predicted the margin by which Scott Walker won his recall election a little over a year ago. It was 7 points. And the poll came out, and it had... this week, Walker with a 7-point lead, which is the biggest lead he's shown in any poll, which may indicate that late deciders are moving towards Walker. If that poll is accurate, then Walker is probably going to win. But there's a lot of money being spent on each side. A lot of other surveys have shown it very close, and it's one to watch very carefully on election night.
Mm-hmm. I saw last night Nate Silver did some compilation of it must be of the polls, and gave Walker, I think, a 75-76% chance of winning on that.
Wow.
Yeah, and, you know, Joe's very, it's very good that he brought up Nate Silver because 538's website has some very careful and methodologically thorough estimates of likely outcomes. And just this morning, they definitely say that Dayton has a high probability of being reelected, but that Walker, as Joe said, the Republican in Wisconsin has a high probability of being reelected.
Okay, let's go up to, talk about a hotly contested race, the 8th District race, Minnesota's huge, sprawling northeastern quadrant. This race pitting incumbent Rick Nolan, a Democrat, against this man, Mills, Stuart Mills, the Republican challenger.
And as you say that, I see your
my hair is growing longer.
Hair.
It's getting longer. It's getting longer. Well, gentlemen, this is a marquee race. Tons of national money is pouring in here. The Republicans want this one badly. They seem to want it more than the U.S. Senate race in terms of money coming in here. I don't know, but
They want it back.
They want it back. Kravac had it for 2 years after the Democrat Oberstar had it for 18 terms.
What a huge sea change up there in that district. I guess it's been changed the geography of it a little bit, but what a difference we're seeing up there these days with. The combative situation rather than one-sided.
Stephen, it used to be the 8th District a slam dunk for the Democrats.
Yeah.
Not anymore. What's going on?
Well, two things, I think. Actually, three things. First, you know, the lines have been drawn differently, so the district extends down into the Twin City exurbs, including places like Wyoming and Cambridge and towns like that. And that's also where the population growth is in the district. Also, the lines moved westward and picked up some Republican counties. So the lines changed. Second, and then the second thing is population growth has been in the more Republican areas of the district. And the third thing is that the Iron Range has depopulated over the last 20 years. There just aren't the votes up there that there used to be that could deliver reliable Democratic majorities. And if you look at the presidential results in 2012 in that district, Barack Obama actually did only got about 51.5% of the vote up there, which is below his statewide average of 54%. So it's a it's a swing district now, pretty clearly. Mm-hmm. And Mills is a well-known name and a well-funded campaign, and he's really taken the battle to Rick Nolan in a big way.
Mm-hmm. Stuart Mills, of course, of the Flea Farm family, no doubt about this. And well-funded and a good campaigner by all measures. He seems to be comfortable out there, articulate and all the rest.
I have to bring something up because I'm teaching a course on the elections with my Carleton students, and only one of my, Carleton draws students from all over the country. Only one of my students is from Minnesota. And I showed them Stuart Mills' ad with his long hair, and their first question was, well, why would a candidate for Congress have hair like that? And I said, lots of people in the 8th District have hair like that. That exactly works for it.
Stephen, I didn't know that. That's true. Have you done a hair survey? Have you?
I've been up there enough.
Okay. Joe, did you know that? There are a lot of long hairs.
I get up to Duluth a lot. There aren't quite as many in Duluth, maybe, as elsewhere.
Well, Stephen Scheer, what are you guessing? How do you handicap the 8th District House race?
Well, the only public survey we have is from KSTP Television, and it had Mills up by 8 points, 47 to 39, and that was done about a week ago, 10 days ago. Larry Sabato of the University of Virginia, who runs his Crystal Ball website, which predicts election outcomes, just in the last 2 days moved this from toss-up to leans Republican.
Yes.
And if I were betting, I would probably bet that Mills will win. I don't know whether he'll win by a big margin, but I think I would give him the edge at this point.
Okay. Joe Kimball, what do you think?
I think that's the way it looks, certainly from what we're hearing. But what, we got 3 days left?
Yeah, that's it. Not much. We're looking at the so-called marquee races here in Minnesota. We'll talk about the U.S. Senate and all the rest here in just a bit. But, okay, we've gone through Minnesota governor, the race for U.S. Senate, 8th District, U.S. House, now Minnesota House of Representatives. All these aforementioned offices currently held by Democrats. Minnesota House is in control of the Democrats. How much longer, we wonder? Joe Kimball, what do you think?
Well, it's... some of it might depend on how well Dayton does, getting out the vote, and if he can rise above that 50%. I often wonder how much people care about the House, the Senate, and the governor all being in one party. And, often it's not. Usually it's not. And it'd be interesting to see afterwards if people talk about that, if they say, we do need a change. We need more balance here.
Having covered the legislature myself, I can tell you the Democrats, if they control the House and they control the Senate, they're like two separate parties. They're fighting with each other all the time. It's like having two-party government. Steve Scheer, what do you think about the Minnesota House? Currently, Paul Thiessen is Speaker of the House. The Democrats have it, but they're breaking a sweat this election. What do you think?
Well, that's right. And actually, the best recent analysis I've read is from Joe's current publication, MinnPost, where they look at the top, this just came out a few days ago, the top 20 competitive seats, and by their analysis, and it looks like a good analysis, the pickup opportunities in those top 20 seats, 17 possibilities for Republicans, only 3 for Democrats. Mm. So there are a bunch of Democratic seats in areas where Republicans tend to do well, and those Democratic incumbents are very much at risk. Republicans only need to pick up 6 seats to take control of the Minnesota House, and I've heard Democratic operatives say that they think they basically rented 6 Republican seats from that last election.
And the lease might be running out. Huh?
Yeah, I mean, the lease may expire here.
Wow.
And so it's quite possible the Republicans will take the House, but it's really hard to predict, because these are small districts, and a lot of these will be won by narrow margins. And we just won't know until late election night, probably.
Steve, you heard Joe wondering out loud whether many voters really care that state government's in the hands of one party right now. What do you think?
Well, that's been an argument Republicans are using, in the state legislative races. And it probably has some traction, particularly in more conservative districts. you know, in those districts where Republicans traditionally do well, I think there's a natural suspicion of Democratic rule that may work to the advantage of Republican state legislative candidates in those areas.
Interesting comment.
Yeah, it's going to be fun to watch election night to see how this falls.
It's going to be good.
Yeah, and it could be late before we really know.
Interesting. We're going to be talking about the other U.S. Congressional House races as well as the U.S. Senate race. Will that flip from Democrats to Republican? We have lots more to chew on here. It all affects you and me, folks, no doubt about it. Professor Steve Scheer of Carleton College in Northfield with us on the line. Joe Kimball of MinnPost right here in the studio. We'll be right back.
Trust and estate plans aren't only for the wealthy. This is Cameron Kelly from Cameron Kelly Law. A good estate plan will ensure that your family is taken care of and your financial goals are met, even if you're not there to make those important decisions. Taking an inventory of your goals and assets is a good place to start. Call me for a free telephone consultation and to get the process started.
Cameron Kelly Law. For your business, for your property. For you, call 651-705-6277. That's 651-705-6277. Cameron Kelly Law.
At the Stan Turner Show, we love good stories, and there's no better place to find them than Valley Bookseller in downtown Stillwater. Valley Bookseller is an independent bookstore with knowledgeable and friendly staff who love books. Tell them what you like to read, and they'll make terrific recommendations just for you. Also, discover one of the finest children's collections in the entire Twin Cities. Valley Bookseller. Great books, great people. 217 North Main in Stillwater. Online at valleybookseller.com.
You finally found it, that old photograph of your grandmother that you've always wanted to share with your grandchildren, but it's torn, cracked, and faded. Well, don't despair. Bring it in to Images of the Past in Stillwater. They specialize in restoring and preserving memories for future generations. So when you bring your old photos to Images of the Past, you can share that beautiful photograph with your grandchildren. You can see examples at klbbradio.com. Keyword, photo. Think of the future, preserve the past. On Main Street in Stillwater at Images of the Past.
At Hymie's Haberdashery, men never sacrifice fashion for weather. So no matter how cold it gets, you can still spot a Hymie's man by his impeccable taste and the confidence that only comes from a hot lather shave. Hymie's Haberdashery helps men look and feel their best with high-quality clothing cut and styled just for them. Create a look that's uniquely yours with tailored suits, overcoats, hats, and accessories that make winter blush. And at prices that won't melt your wallet. Hymie's Haberdashery, 400 St. Peter Street in downtown St. Paul. Online at Hymie's.
We are chewing over the coming election this coming Tuesday, folks. It'll all be over. All those nasty attack ads will disappear for a while, and your mailbox will be free of all that stuff. You know what I'm talking about. And right now, we're talking about all of it right here. Who's up? Who's down? What are the issues? Joe Kimball of MinnPost, longtime political reporter, and Professor Stephen Scheer, a specialist in American politics, political science at Carleton College in Northfield, Minnesota. Professor, control of the U.S. Senate. Boy, oh boy, oh boy. Summer rating, 70% chance that the Republicans will take control of the so-called upper chamber, take it away from the Democrats. They need to pick up, what, six seats. So what do you think about this one?
Well, I guess I'd go with the consensus forecast right now. Just about all the rating services that calculate probabilities based on the polls show that by 60% up to 95% probability that Republicans will take the U.S. Senate. And the if you look at a really good site, Real Clear Politics, they post all the related polls and they average the polls. And if you look at the poll averages this morning, it's Republicans winning 52 seats and becoming the majority. And then if you look at, as Joe mentioned, 538, Nate Silver's site where they calculate probabilities, their most likely outcome is that the Republicans take 52 seats. Mm-hmm. So it's certainly looking that way, Stan. Mm-hmm.
If that happens, Steve, how does that affect Obama's last 2 years?
Well, I think that Obama will face challenges he hasn't faced before with Congress. And he is not known for, shall we say, his extensive relationships with members on the Hill. In fact, Charlie Cook, who does the Cook Political Newsletter, said that, you know, the second-term approach of the Obama administration in Washington can be summed up in three words: no new friends. If that's their approach over the next 2 years, it's going to be rough sledding for the president. Mm-hmm.
There are lots of scenarios with regard to the U.S. Senate come Tuesday, Steve, and some of them we could see some runoff elections, like possibly in Louisiana and Georgia. And if that were to come to pass, we wouldn't know the results of the Senate. Who controls the Senate maybe into January in some
that's
cases.
Right.
This is all fanciful, but, you know, in American politics, as you well know, anything is possible. What do you think?
Yeah, well, we have to remember that Senate races are administered by states, and state law affects how you're elected to the Senate. And in the state constitutions of both Louisiana and Georgia, you're elected to the Senate by a majority vote. And we have three candidates in each of those races, meaning it's very unlikely that anybody will get a majority of the votes. And in Louisiana, that leads to a runoff in December, and in Georgia, a runoff on January 6th. So we may not know until the night of January 6th if the Republicans actually have control of the Senate.
How about that?
Some uncertainty like 6 years ago when we weren't sure what had happened in Minnesota.
That's true. That's true. Well, here we are. Steve, I always like to ask you, since you are an instructor, I was astounded, Joe and I were astounded to know you only have one Minnesota student in your class, all the rest from around the country. That's interesting.
Yeah.
What are the young people saying? Are they talking at all? Are they engaged at all in this election? Obviously, they have to be. They're in your class. But I mean,
they don't have a choice.
They don't have a choice. But do they seem genuinely involved in the election? And if so, what are they talking about? What are the issues? Who are the candidates they're talking about?
I mean, my students are. I would say more generally on campus, not so much. I always find college students a lot more involved in presidential years than in midterm elections. There have been some Democratic rallies on campus and some Democratic candidate visits. We had the governor here yesterday, in a quick bus stop, but only about 24 people showed up. So that tells you a lot about how interested the students are. Having said that, our students vote. They will be voting. But in terms of enthusiasm, no, I really haven't seen a lot of it.
Go ahead, Joe.
Our youngest son's in college out of state, and I had to nag him to do the absentee thing. Whereas his brother a couple of years ago, there was no problem with getting it done in time for the presidential.
Steve Scheer, I believe you reside and teach in the 2nd Congressional District, right?
Yes.
Okay. So we have a Republican incumbent, John Klein, going for another term there, getting a spirited campaign, a challenge from Mike Obermueller. How is that one looking? Most people are saying Klein by a pretty good margin. What do you think?
It would seem to be the case. Here's a little fact that I think helps to explain what's going on. The average, when you look at U.S. House races in 2012, 2 years ago, when a challenger beat an incumbent, they spent on average about $1.7 million. And Mike Obermueller has raised only half that amount. So that would suggest he's got a tough mountain to climb to beat John Klein. Now, the district is only marginally Republican, but John Klein has, superior name recognition, superior financial resources. He's much more evident on television than Mike Obermueller, and he's pretty clearly favored in this district.
Yeah, it's interesting to note that John Klein, the Republican, got the endorsement of the Star Tribune, which is, at least on its op-ed page, known for its liberal slant. That surprise you?
No, he has been endorsed in the past, but, the big surprise to me, Stan, was that Stuart Mills was endorsed.
Yes, he was.
By the Star Tribune.
That's right.
That really raised my eyebrows.
Are endorsements worth a darn these days? Do they sway vote?
They ain't what they used to be, because newspapers don't hold the prominence in the media that they used to, I think. I don't know if Joe agrees with that.
Joe, what do you?
Well, I'm sorry to say that I do. I'm sad to say that I do. Really, really has changed.
Yeah, it has.
The Pioneer came out for both Johnson and McFadden, I saw.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And interesting about the Pioneer Press, without endorsing her, they seemed to endorse Betty McCollum, the DFL incumbent, in the 4th District. Amazing. We'll get to that in just a minute. Let's go to the 3rd District. This is the southwestern Twin Cities suburbs here. Incumbent Republican Eric Paulson against Sharon Sund, the Democrat. Steve, what about that?
Well, that could be a competitive district. Again, it's marginally Republican, only by a point or two. And Eric Paulson, when he was first elected, was elected by a fairly narrow margin. But since that time, he's raised a lot of money and has been very attentive to the district. And he's really not facing an opponent who's well-funded or well-known. Mm. So that's going to be a pretty comfortable win for Paulson, I think.
And it doesn't seem that he's done anything that to anger people or to think he's misplaced his priorities that I've seen.
Yeah, I mean, that's a really important point because just contrast the representative style of Paulson and Klein versus Michelle Bachmann. And Joe's point is made. I mean, Michelle Bachmann was out there being controversial 24/7, and that has not been the approach of either Klein or Paulson, and it's really worked for Klein and Paulson.
So most handicappers, I think it's fair to say most, are rating Betty McCollum in the 4th and Keith Ellison in the 5th district, both Democratic incumbents as winners next Tuesday. That's the way it's looking. Let's look at that open seat in District 6 you were talking about, Michelle Bachmann. She's not running. She's retired from Congress. And we've got Tom Emmer, a Republican who ran almost beat Dayton for governor last time around. And he's the favorite, is he, so far?
Oh, yeah, prohibitive. I mean, that's a ruby red district. It's preponderantly Republican. And if you look at the funding totals of Emmer's opponents, they have almost zero money. So I think you can safely say Emmer will win that race.
We have something new in the rhetoric of politics. Ruby red district. I like that.
Do you think if Graves had stayed in that it would have been different?
Ah, good. He's the Democrat who won, almost beat Bachmann last time.
Right, and it talked about coming back, but then when she decided not to run, so did he.
Yeah, I think it would have been a much more competitive race. It's still a tough district for any Democrat, but Graves would have had the name recognition and the positive name identification and more money. And that would have closed the gap to an extent. I don't know if he could have won, but it would have been closer, definitely.
Now let's get up to the 7th district, a sprawling district along the western third of Minnesota. Colin Peterson, the Democrat, has had that for many years. I think he has reason for concern. Steve Scherer, what do you make of this?
Oh, my gosh. The number of ads being run by the National Republican Campaign Congressional Campaign Committee aimed at Colin Peterson is really quite amazing. I'm seeing all sorts of ads on television. It's very clear that a lot of national money has come into this race. Now, this is a Republican district. It should elect a Republican to the House. And a majority of the state legislators from that region are Republican. But Colin Peterson's been in for 23 years, and he has not been a liberal Democrat. He has been one of the more conservative Democrats in the U.S. House, and there aren't many of them anymore. Mm-hmm. He has also delivered a lot of material benefits to that district when he was chair, and he's now ranking minority member of the House Ag Committee. And that may be the bulwark that helps him defeat Tory Winstrom, the Republican state legislator is running against him.
Colin is what we used to call a blue dog Democrat. Huh?
Yeah.
Okay. No, Joe, any take on the 7th district?
Well, the agriculture thing seems to probably be a saving grace, and it would be too bad if we lost that high-ranking voice in Congress, but I agree that it's going to be very close.
Steve, one of those TV ads you told me about, Colin Peterson, his opponent, showing what a split screen of Colin as he looked 20 years ago and as he looks
today. It's uncharitable, Stan. It's really uncharitable. It shows a picture of Colin Peterson 23 years ago, and then it morphs into a picture of Colin Peterson today. Now, none of us could survive that scrutiny. I mean, it's mean, but it's funny, you know? And
it could be mean and funny enough to tip the scales, too.
I hope, well, who knows?
Who knows? Let's go back to we already did the 8th district. How about the 1st district across southern Minnesota? Incumbent Democrat Tim Walz in a race against Jim Hagedorn, the Republican challenger. What about that one, Steve?
Well, now, that's a district that could be competitive. It's actually about evenly split between Democrats and Republicans. But Republicans have not nominated a candidate who has been competitive with Walz for several elections now. And Walz won by 15 points the last time. Jim Hagedorn, who's been nominated by the GOP, is underfunded and is now notorious for a bunch of blog posts that were offensive to a large number of voters. So this is, I think you can call pretty comfortably for Tim Walz.
Okay. Any comment on that, Joe?
It was a surprise to me that Hagedorn won in the primary, I guess.
He was not the endorsed candidate. But he is the son of Tom Hagedorn, who represented the western part of that district
He
was in the U.S. House back in the 1970s. So I think the name identification made a difference.
Yeah, I think Hagedorn was in the old 2nd District down there, right?
Yeah.
Republican, the blonde-haired, good-looking fellow, and made a good candidate. Steve, I want to turn the tables. You're the professor here, but Professor, I'd like to ask you, the Tea Party, what, please define it in plain English for us, the Tea Party, and how influential is it these days?
Well, the Tea Party is an anti-government party. They're a lot like the Perot voters of the 90s in that they're very skeptical of government. They think the national spending and debt is way out of control, and they want less government intervention in their lives. And it's being used against Jeff Johnson. Alliance for Better Minnesota ads are calling him Tea Party Republican, Jeff Johnson. They're not as influential as they used to be. They are an important faction in the Republican Party, obviously, Democrats think that they are controversial enough that you can use that label to hurt Republican candidates. So I don't think they're the force they used to be.
Joe Kimball, any thoughts about the Tea Party?
In the 6th, I think we probably see more influence there, and then Hagedorn, too. But outside them, around the state, I'm not seeing as much of it.
Okay.
Yeah, I agree with that.
The constitutional races in the state of Minnesota, Attorney General, Auditor, Secretary of State. Secretary of State's an open seat. Mark Ritchie not running this time around. Who knows there? The Attorney General's race, Lori Swanson, the Democratic incumbent. She gets pretty good notices from a lot of people. What do you think, Steve?
Oh, I think she's likely to win. We have not had a Republican Attorney General for 43 years. And so I don't think it's likely we'll have one this month.
Doug Head, is that the one? Huh?
Yeah.
Doug Head,
I think,
the last Republican. Yes, indeed. And Auditor Rebecca Otto has been taking some flack. She's the DFL incumbent. Randy Gilbert, the GOP contender. There's some three others there. Nobody knows or cares about the Auditor except when things are misspent at the government level and we hear about the Auditor. What do you think? Rebecca Otto reelected?
Well, gee, I think all those constitutional offices will probably go to the DFL unless there's some sort of wave such as occurred in previous years that swept Republicans into office up and down the ballot. Without that, I would expect the Democratic nominees to prevail.
How do you account for the fall of the Independence Party, where they're just really not competitive at all and may fall below the threshold this time?
Yeah. Well, yeah, this is a huge point you're making. If none of the independent candidates get 5% of the statewide vote, the party loses public funding and designation as a major party. And that's probably the end of the Independence Party. So we may be seeing the end of it now. I think their problem is candidate recruitment. They needed to find people who are either well-known or well-funded. And they don't have anybody running statewide who's well-known or well-funded, and that could be the end for them.
Their great hope, of course, was Jesse Ventura, that he was beautifully situated to draw talent from both sides of the political aisle and thereby really make an Independence Party for real in this state. But his critics will say that he squandered that opportunity badly, that he was a party of one person, namely Jesse Ventura, and any great hopes vanished as he left office. What do you think of that?
Well, I think you summed it up very accurately.
Yeah. We've got a couple seconds left here, Steve Scheer. One of your books, By Invitation Only, The Rise of Exclusive Politics in the U.S. What does that mean?
Well, it's all about how campaigns are about targeted messages to little parts of the public. And you really leave out a lot of voters and a lot of issues by targeting so carefully. And you can see it in the campaign ads where they pick up itty-bitty issues to use against candidates or itty-bitty personal traits.
Yeah.
And that just shuts a lot of people out because their concerns are not being addressed on the public airwaves.
Mm-hmm. I like the title of one of your other books. You call this an election? Huh? I like that. Very nicely done. Professor Stephen Scheer, oh, wonderful friend, wonderful political science mind and analyst. Thank you so much for being with us again, Steve. It's been a while since we've spoken. It's been a great pleasure. Thank you.
Happy to do it.
Okay, sir. Don't forget to vote, Steve, okay?
I won't. Don't worry.
And Joe Kimball of InPost. Joe, thanks. Having nice having you here again. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
You're not an early voter, are you, Steve? You're going to go on
no,
Tuesday.
No, I got
it's a ritual, isn't
I like
it?
The ritual.
All
I
right.
Think that,
all right.
It's important. Talk to the judges. See how many people have been in.
Always the reporter. Always the inquiring mind. We're out of town. We're out of luck. We're out of time. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.